Hello, hello. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about crate
first, hopefully. Okay. Oh, it says you joined. Hi.
Hi.
Woohoo, that was easier than normal.
Well, let's see if I can get myself on my tripod here because this is the hard part for me. Hello, everybody.
I know. Thank you all for joining. We are going to be talking about crate training today in just a minute. We're going to go live on Facebook and YouTube first. Yes.
Let's hope it stays and doesn't go flying. All right, here we go. We're going to go live. Hello, all of our friends on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram.
Hi. Yes, so happy to have you here.
Okay. Thank you for joining us for another weekly pet roundup.
Yes.
Today's a really good topic. I think this is a really important topic, and I don't know your stance on it. You don't know mine. I mean, I think I kind of...
Yeah.
Kira's like hacking up a lung over here, so forgive me. Are you all right, doll? I'm excited to hear your thoughts, and we are going to be covering an article by the Washington Post that came out on March 20th. It is written by Kelly Conaboy, who is not a pet expert. She's a writer who has a dog, and she talks about dogs, culture, and dog culture. Dogs, culture, and dog culture. So she is not a dog trainer or anything like that I could tell, but she did interview two dog experts. One of them is Kate Anderson, assistant clinical professor at Cornell Duffield Institute for Animal Behavior, and the other that she interviewed was Renee Erdman, a behavior consultant specializing in dog aggression and dog reactivity. Even though I don't see Erdman's acronym, so I don't know who she trained with or what her credentials are. But I would say, to begin with, this was an overall good article. I agree with the vast majority of what it talks about.
I know. I was actually kind of surprised. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. Let's get some good articles out here. Thank you.
Yeah. So great job, Kelly Conaboy. I only have... a couple notes about a couple things that were mentioned, but I think overall this is exactly the kind of article we want to be included, for pet parents to be reading, because it does show kind of both sides. And it even talks about PETA specifically, about crate training is illegal in some countries. Crate training is not accepted by PETA, but I feel like PETA is not the best resource on the opinion there, because they don't believe in pet ownership at all. They consider pet ownership slavery, so obviously they're going to be like, no way. Hi, Brooke! Thanks for joining us. Brooke is joining us from Katy, Texas. She is the owner of Animal Admiration Pet Services down there. I love her. Oh, nice. Hi, Brooke. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
And I know, as a professional pet sitter, Brooke, a long time ago, when I was a professional pet sitter, we deal a lot with pet parents and crates, because you usually call a dog walker or pet sitter when you have a puppy and you're trying to potty train them. So we deal a lot with bodily fluids, therefore we deal a lot with crates, because either for puppies or for seniors, sometimes crate training needs to happen again be revisited because of that. So it just depends on where they are in their life. But overall, this is for crate training under the right circumstances.
Yes. And I'm really interested to hear your opinion as a pet sitter, because my opinion is as a positive reinforcement trainer. I have an opinion from that, my experience as a trainer. So your experience is very different as a pet sitter. The first things that come to my mind are the safety of the pet sitters, Right. So what, well, let's first talk about what some of the things they said in the article.
Yeah. So it starts really well. It starts saying that, you know, she, her own personal experience is that her dog likes his crate. He has a very large crate. It's oversized for him so that he's comfortable. It has a foam mattress in there. He has a blanket. He sits there whenever he's chilling. So for her dog, the crate is a very positive place. I thought it was really well done because the first thing I want to actually talk about is the misconception that all dogs are going to like a crate because they're den animals. They're not den animals. They den at birth. They are otherwise not den animals. So that's like a very small fraction of their life that is spent denning. And they, I really like that she included this because I think a lot of not very educated dog trainers are going to say like, yeah, they're den animals. So yes, the crate makes sense. And that is not actually accurate. They den only at the beginning of their life. Mama and babies den together. And that is pretty much once the babies are out hunting, the denning kind of stops. So that is the biggest thing. By the way, do you have any kind of feedback? Are you hearing any kind of feedback?
No. Do you have feedback?
I do. I feel like I hear somebody speaking.
Can you hear my husband?
Maybe. It's a man's voice. Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I know. I have a husband with a voice that carries, so I totally get it. So that's the first thing we're going to address and eliminate right there from the get-go. And I love that Kelly included that because, again, it's always used in favor of crates, but it's not accurate. There are a lot of things you can use in favor of crates, but that's not one of them, okay? So another thing it starts off the bat with, which I think is so important in reporting, is to not go through the good stuff and then wait for the bad. It goes straight into, it's good for some dogs, not for dogs with separation anxiety. Yeah. And that is so important because people think like, oh, my dog acts out when they're anxious or nervous because I leave, so I have to crate them. And you're actually, to quote Milena DiMartini, the expert, the foremost expert in
separation anxiety.
In separation anxiety. And I had her on my show and she literally says, when we crate a dog that has already a fear of confinement, a fear of being left alone, she says, you're confining the dog with their panic. So you don't want to do that. You never want to confine anybody with their panic. That is an old school way of thinking where we're going to like, you know,
just like immersion therapy.
Exactly. Like, we're going to like put somebody in a room full of snakes and they're not going to be scared of snakes anymore. That is not how that works. So that is the biggest thing is, and as a pet sitter, I do have, so Brooke is saying she hears something too. Okay, well, it's okay. We'll move on. And
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. We'll move on because it sounds like it's ending. So I, as a professional pet sitter, I remember very clearly there was a dog named Blue and they had zip tied his crate because he would get out of it. And so the reason Milena said these words on my show is because I asked her, I was like, I know that this is wrong. Do you see this being done a lot? And she says, yes, because the dog seems to like not respond well to the crate. So and he like wants to break out of the crate. So let me zip tie it or use locks to keep him in the crate. Or let's, like the article says, let's upgrade to one of these industrial strength crates. But that is not at all what you want to do. Instead, you want to go backwards. You don't want to go forwards with like a heavier duty crate. You want to go backwards and reintroduce the crate. You want to address the separation anxiety. You don't want to confine this dog with an upgraded crate. Poor guy.
Right. I know.
So, or with zip ties, because the reality is that when a crate goes wrong, it can go very wrong. A crate, they can get injured trying to get out from under it. They can literally like strangle themselves between the floor of the crate and the actual crate if they do enough damage. If they try to pull apart the bars, the same thing can happen. They can strangle themselves in the bars and they can break teeth. They can break nails. They can get puncture wounds if they manage to somehow break the crate enough. for something to puncture them. So there's a lot of stuff that can happen. And also, even if the crate is intact, there's a lot of self-harm that can happen. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to like confine this poor animal to where they're taking out that anxiety on their, like by licking, by chewing, by eating, whatever. A lot of times they might have, you know, some kind of fluff, some kind of towel, some kind of bedding, and they eat it and they can choke on it, for, you know, from chewing, from that anxiety that they feel. So crates are, have a great place in training, in my opinion, but the crate has to be first introduced properly. And actually, thank you, Todd Williams, for saying, he asked, is the crate a punishment? Never use as punishment. Because you're all, you're, if you're trying to introduce the crate positively and then you use it as punishment, you've completely undone every effort you like made already, right? As a dog trainer, have you seen people, like, have you had to break people of that?
Oh my gosh, it is one of, like, there are a handful of topics that just immediately, as soon as I hear somebody ask a question or make a statement, my brain is just like on fire. And crating dogs is one of those things, because people, I mean, almost everyone I have ever come into contact with, they don't realize it, but they are using it as punishment.
Right.
And they are completely ruining the relationship that their dog has with the crate. And for that reason, it is not my go-to. Like, I try, I will help people crate train if we have had extensive conversation about what the crate is for. Like, I do not ever want somebody to just go and throw their dog in a crate and, you know, be like, there, you're good, I'm done with you. Like, that's what I see.
Yes, especially with puppies,
because they are so much work. And I get there's so much work, but you can't just throw them in a crate because you need a break. And that's what people do. That's how people use crates. Mm-hmm. And that's where we find this, you know, avoidance behavior, this backlash of behavior. And it's a really interesting way, I think, to bring up the idea of fear-based and dominance-based training to help people understand what, like, they can see that firsthand, that their dog is rebelling from the crate. Yeah. They're whining and crying in the crate. And so, like, that has been a good, like, opening as to why you never, ever want to use fear or pain-based training.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I have this like love hate relationship with crates for that reason. And I too was like really happy to see that her dog loves her crate, because my dogs have always used their crates in the exact same way that she meant. It's like, she calls, I don't know what she called it, his apartment or something.
Yeah, his apartment. His condo or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've always called my crates my dog's bedrooms, because it is where they want to go to hang out, to chill, to have a nap. It is cozy and comfy. The door stays open all the time, unless we're training for the crate or it's necessary that the door needs to be closed for some reason.
Well, I have a comment over here from Todd Williams. Todd's also part of Anima Admiration, and he says, is the crate a punishment or a safe space? If you have kids, do you send them to their room if they make a mistake? I don't send my kids to the room. If my kids are displaying behavior that I don't like, and this goes for dogs as well, I address the behavior by figuring out what's causing the behavior, where it's coming from, what the goal of the behavior is. I analyze the behavior, and if my kids want attention, I give them attention. If my kids are hungry and they're acting out, because I have little ones that sometimes still don't know that they're acting out because they're hungry or because they need something, so I investigate why they're behaving this certain way, and I never ever send my kids to their room ever. And I hope that it's the same thing. Like, if you realize that your child or your dog is acting out a certain way, instead of immediately being like, get out of here, find out what the root of that behavior is and address that, not their presence, because you want their presence. You want them to feel comfortable. You want them to be loved. You want them to feel unconditionally loved. And if they're acting out, especially if they're really little, like dogs, the, what their average the average cognitive ability of a dog is like 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
My youngest is 4 years old. So they're very similar in cognitive ability. Like yesterday we were at a restaurant, my husband and my two kids, and Mila was stepping on Chris, like nonstop, like hurting him. And I look and he was like getting angry because that's like, we're like, ouch, that hurts. And I was like, actually, I think she wants your attention, because I was talking to Noah and Chris was like eating or something, and so she kind of felt like nobody's paying
Okay.
attention to me, and she did not really want to eat. She wasn't hungry. She kind of wanted to interact. And so I was like, all she wants is attention. And he was like, what do you mean? She was like, look at this, Dad. And then she moved on. So it wasn't like she didn't have the words to say it. Our dogs don't have the words to say it either. So misbehaviors that people use like as punishment, like the crate as punishment would be like chewing, would be like barking incessantly, would be like jumping up. What other behaviors do you see where people are like, I'm gonna send them to their crate because they need to stop that? Like, what kind of behaviors do people say
Yeah, it
to you?
is very much the okay, when they're potty training and they make a mistake, they want to throw them in the crate, right?
Yes. Okay. We are
They
going to talk about potty training and crates for sure. And
Yes.
that's counterproductive, but okay, because they already eliminate it. Like
Right.
they already peed. So like if
Yes.
you want to send them somewhere, send them outside so they can
Outside.
finish what they did outside. But yes, okay. Perfect. Great idea, guys. Great.
The
That's sarcasm.
energy, they have energy and you don't want to deal with it.
My gosh,
It
it's
doesn't
literally
matter
the
what the
opposite
si
of what they should be doing,
yes,
basically.
it doesn't matter what the situation is, really, it's that the person doesn't want to deal with it.
Right. So your
And
dog peed, you put them in their crate. The dog peed in the kitchen, you put them in their crate. So what are you telling the dog? Pee in the crate. That's not what you want. The dog has energy, so what do? You confine them instead of taking them for a walk or going to play with them, or even like just giving them some kind of like tug at home. Like tug is
Yeah.
another conversation that's controversial, but like doing something with them instead of doing all that, you're going to put them in their crate. Like literally counterproductive, exactly the opposite
Yeah.
of what somebody like us would tell you to do in those situations.
Yeah.
The idea that you're going to calm your pet down by putting them in a small space is the same idea as you're going to get your kid hopped up on Mountain Dew and then you're going to send them to their room to be quiet. Like,
That's
exactly.
all I
Thank
can think.
you. Okay, that's exactly what the movie I was
Like,
thinking of.
I'm
So, can
gonna
you
come at you like
imagine?
a
Can you
spider
imagine sending those kids to read quietly in a book nook? Like,
Right. No.
that's what you're doing. You're telling your kid or your dog,
Yeah.
here's all this energy you have, and let's just throw it in a crate and contain it.
Right.
But we're not going to do anything about your energy. We're just going to give you a
Right.
smaller space to to remove it or to exert it.
Right.
Great job. That makes
But
zero sense.
also what we're telling our pets, which if we go back to, and I don't usually like to chime in on the parenting stuff because I'm not a parent, but I was a child who was
Right,
parented.
exactly.
what we're telling our dog in the same way what we told our kids, what I was told when I was sent to my room, because I was sent to my room constantly. Can you imagine the mouth I have on me? And what we're telling them is that this is your problem. These are your emotions. I don't want to deal with them. You are on your own. Figure this out. How is your dog supposed to do that? They can't
They
let
don't.
themselves out. They
No.
can't. I mean, some of them may try to play by themselves some, but that's not fun or
I've ne
engaging.
never had a dog that did that. And I don't have
Yeah.
children that do that either. Mila is now more independent, but when they're really little, about 2.5, they want to show you everything. And they want to. And of course,
Yes.
a dog can't let himself out if he needs to pee. And a dog can't
Right.
take himself for a walk.
Right.
So.
And just the same way that children don't know how to regulate their emotions
Not
until
at
they're
all.
taught.
Oh my
So
gosh. I
we're,
don't know how to regulate
I
my
don't
emotions sometimes.
either, right? So we're telling our children to figure it out on your own, and I'm going to punish you when you get it wrong.
Right.
It's the same thing we're doing with our
100%.
dogs.
100%. 100%. And that's why training and equipment and the duration of the time that you're in there really matters, right? It's all about context. This is one of my favorite quotes ever, and you will hear me say it almost every time we speak. A fool with a tool is still a fool. Repeat after me. A fool with a tool is still a fool.
Okay.
Why? Because I can give somebody a crate,
yeah,
and I can have them use it beautifully and that dog develop a fantastic relationship with its crate. And I can see the benefits of that crate training process, which, by the way, you can crate train your pet the first year of life and never use it again for 5 years, and that association will still usually last if it's a positive one or if it's a negative one. So you want to get it right.
Yeah.
But then I can also give another person a crate and I can watch them completely destroy that potential benefit because of all the missteps they take.
Yeah.
So the tool's the same. It's the fool that makes the difference, right? So really, the article's so good because it goes into like using positive reinforcement to introduce the crate, taking your time, you know, having them associate the crate with something positive.
Mm-hmm.
My kids associate my mom with very positive things because she always comes with goodies. She takes them out to eat. She takes them to the movies. She plans things. When I say Yaya's coming, they're like, when, right? But
yeah.
If my mom came and she was like an angry grandma, they would be like, all right,
yeah,
right? Or if she was really mean. And that's
mm-hmm.
the same thing. It's like, if you do it right, they're going to be like, oh, cool, this is a crate.
Yeah.
If they have other underlying issues, like they, for my dog, Socks, we crate trained her, but she had a recessed vulva. Yes, we're talking that. So she needed a booty lift. For all intents and purposes, that's what it was. And it's called an episioplasty, but she didn't have that, and we didn't know that that's what she needed. So she kept peeing in her crate.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't want to go in her crate because she couldn't, she had constant UTIs, constant issues as a puppy. We hadn't figured this out yet. So she goes in, and like within 30 minutes, she has to pee. And so now I'm gone for an hour, and she's stuck in her own filth for half
right.
an hour. So for her, that was a very, very negative experience. And
mm-hmm.
then obviously a dog with separation anxiety, a lot of their anxiety shows up in urination or defecation. So now they're crate trained, they're crated, they're anxious because they live anxious. And now they're urinating and defecating on top of themselves. And now they have nowhere to go because they're confined in not only their panic, but in their own personal waste.
Yeah.
So those situations like obviously are terrible for the pet, no matter how positive you are about associating that crate, if they have physical or emotional, mental issues that make it so that the crate's
mm-hmm.
not compatible for them, that's different. But when a dog is just a dog that is neutral
mm-hmm.
on the crate and you introduce it properly, you're going to be successful and you can
yeah.
also ruin it and make them not so neutral
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, like, it is possible to have a dog with separation anxiety and you work with them and they can come to love their crate, because my dog is a perfect example. By the way, she's still, I mean, I don't think you ever get, quote unquote, get rid of separation anxiety. You manage it, right? You figure out ways to help your dog manage separation anxiety. And she had it when we adopted her. So, but still, she loves her crate because
yeah.
it from the get-go, she has only had positive associations with her crate, with me. And she trusts me because of all of the work. And everything I did was from Milena. It used to be Milena DeMartini Price, but I think she dropped the Price, right?
No, I think it's Milena DeMartini, I think is her professional name. She's
okay.
Milena DeMartini Price. I think personally,
okay.
She is, if you ever see CSAT on anybody's like, acronyms at the end of their, you know, like is, I'm not any of these things. So I'm not, yeah, their professional
yeah.
titles, their credentials. I'm going to just pretend because this is not what I am. I haven't earned this, but if you see like Isabel Alvarez Arada, CSAT, that means that person finish the professional course that Milena offers that means they're specialized in separation anxiety. If you have a dog with separation anxiety, that is 100% where both of us would tell you to go. Milena has a course for pet parents and pet professionals. It's called Mission Possible. And then she also has dog trainers that specialize where you can have one-on-one specific to your situation. So if you have separation anxiety in your home, address that first, before you start crate training. Address that with your positive trainer and see where it's appropriate to add the crate to your training, to your management. But don't do crate training first, separation anxiety next, because you could be exacerbating the separation anxiety by using the crate. So be really cautious. And I too have a separation anxiety dog. And this is the thing, as dog owners, we're like, we're constantly investigating because our pets can't tell us. So for her, whenever I've taken a crate out, she'll go in it. She likes it, but she doesn't love the door closed. So for her, it is safety because she is noise phobic. So I feel like it kind of feels like she's in a little bit of a protected area when there's a storm or fireworks, but she doesn't want to be kept in there all day.
Yeah.
At all. Like, she doesn't want to be kept in there for an hour, even with the door closed. Like, she just doesn't like it. My sister has a dog that stays most of the day when he's just chilling in his crate by a window. She set it up properly in a place where it's inciting for him to go. He gets sun. It's cozy. It's comfy. And he enjoys it. But like, Kira much prefers being outside of a crate. Even if I have a crate out for another dog, she'll use it a couple days and then she'll stop going in it, right? Like, the novelty wears off. So it's really about investigating and observing your pet and what they like and what they don't like. The size is really an important conversation because it depends on why you are crate training. So if you're crate training for potty breaks, for like potty training, then you want a smaller crate area so that they don't have like a pee-pee here and then push it out of the way, right? Because like, that's what they'll do. Dogs are super smart.
Yeah.
So they'll be like, oh, look at this towel. I can pee there and then I'll scoot it over to the corner and then I'll just chill. So like, that's counterproductive to the potty training process. So that's why they sell the big crates with like the little separators, right? So that you, and we use those a lot, and we would have to tell our clients like, okay, I think Fido has outgrown that space. Let's give him a little more, right? Because you kind of go little by little and it makes it so that it's so nice through the process. And that should only take you a few months. That should not take very much longer than that. If you do crate training properly and it's on you to do it properly, it doesn't take that long and you shouldn't need these tools that long. And if you are crate training and your dog still uses like the towel or the bedding, your dog might have to be in there for shorter periods of time without anything in there, because they might just end up using like towels to pee and then push them out of the way. And another thing about bedding is that if you have a chewer, because a lot of people use crates for chewing, like, I had a client whose dog ate drywall. So, like, there are ways that you can manage chewing, and then there are dogs that will find anything and chew it. So, unless you're gonna, like, literally, like, not have anything on your, in your home, like, not furniture, not anything, some chewers really do need to be crated because they can't help themselves. And obviously, it's a danger to themselves to chew through a wall. It's dangerous to chew through wood on, like, you know, your kitchen table. It's dangerous to do all those things. So, but if you have a chewer and that's why you're crating, then you might not need to have anything in that crate, because they're going to start just chewing that bedding or chewing that blanket, and that bed, that foam, beautiful memory foam mattress is gone by the time you get home, and they could ingest something and cause either an obstruction or choke. So again, the reason that you crate train is going to tell you what size of crate you need, how long they could be in there. I personally feel like it's a skill we teach our pets that is not forever. It's a skill. We use it. If you have a puppy, you use it for potty training. If you have a chewer, you use it until they outgrow that vigorous chewing age, because that is usually associated with younger pets. And then you can always bring it back if you travel, if you have to, you know, you go to a hotel where they, you can have your dog, but they have to be crated. Like, I've gone to inns like that, which Kira does fine, because I'll take the crate. She hasn't been crated in years, but she, you know, we'll go back and forth and we'll see her and make sure she's comfortable, but she'll be crated because that's the hotel's like requirement. So really, it's all about why you're crating, how long you're leaving them in the crate, and the size of the crate. Otherwise, you know, if you mess any of those up, you can really mess up the whole process.
Yeah, and I do think it is important to work with your dog to have positive associations with a crate, even if like you have to get yourself in the right mindset. I say this with everything, but it's true. Like you have to know in your heart that it's going to work, that your dog is going to be happy and safe and comfortable, and go in with that mindset. But it is important for emergencies, for if you have to evacuate, if you have to go to, I mean, who knows where you live, right? Like there's a tornado and you have to go down to the
Yes,
shelter, or there's a
exactly.
hurricane, there's a flood, there's
Exactly.
whatever, and you're not going to be able to like take your pet unless they're crated. Or like there's an emergency, they have to stay at the vet because they are
Yes.
going to be put in a kennel at the vet, hands
Or they
down,
have a
period.
6-month recovery from an ACL tear, and like you have to limit their movement. You know, it's like the everything in extremes is bad, and like you can't expect a dog to not have this skill and just like go through regular life. Like you can't, because at some point there's going to be an opportunity for you to be like, uh-oh, now what do I do? Like, you know what I mean? And like people are saying, okay, I'll pen my dog during the potty training process, but like again, they might be able to pee in one corner of the pen and like, you know, live in the other part, so it might not be as effective. There's ways to work around things. Like, sure, like I'm not gonna knock anybody trying to pen instead of crate, but like at some point, your dog may need a post-op 2 to 3 day period where they just really need to. And if they're a puppy and they're super hyper and like they get up and run every time, they do the zoomies every time somebody gets home, that's gonna be tough. That's gonna be really tough. And obviously, in those moments, you have to be really careful about them developing a negative association. So you have to be still very careful, even if you did it right the first time. But that's a skill that your dog now has, where you can be like, okay, honey, relax. And like you can tell when a dog is really anxious to get out of the crate by the way they get out of it. Like I had a dog walking client that jumped on me so hard, he ripped all like from my shorts to my knees. I was bleeding because he was so excited to get out of his crate that he bolted toward me the second I like opened the crate, just like went whoosh. I didn't even know how he had from like from walking out to jumping on me so close. I don't even know how he was physically able to get up so quickly. He like just jumped on his hind legs and landed on my legs. And so that was a conversation I had to have with the client, was like, I think he might be crated too long. Like I'm coming in midday, and if you left, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours before, he's already met his maximum. Other dogs, you come in, you know, he was young, but like other dogs, you come in 5 hours later and they're chill. They're just like, oh, hey, what's up? So again, it's about checking in with, where is she? She's in her crate. Oh, she's like mine. She digs her little spaces. Kira does too.
She's like, you're not
Kira
paying attention to me, so I'm
does
gonna
too.
come over here and
Exactly. I
dig.
dig. So again, like it's a skill, and I think that there are a lot of reasons why you should crate train. Is potty training is one of them. As a former professional dog walker, I mean, all of my dog walker friends are going to agree with this. Like it's just so nice to come in, you know, have us come more than once. Like if you're gone for 8 to 10 hours, and if you have a puppy, it's not enough time to come midday. You need to have us come at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. You know, like shorten those periods at minimum and give us enough time to wear your dog out between visits so that they're not like going into their crate like fully ready to like hang out and have fun, because we're gonna leave them again confined with their panic, with their energy, with their anxiety, whatever it is that they're feeling. Travel, like as a military spouse, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people travel long distances with their dogs just sitting in the back. Like I'm not for that. If you have an accident, your dog is safer in a crate. If you're going, obviously, air travel and you have a big dog, air travel with a small dog and a soft carrier, those are skills you need to teach your pets. And especially military families, you have to do this proactively. You get a pet today, you know you're gonna PCS in 2 years, you need to start getting them acclimated to that carrier or that crate today, from the second you get them home. Because if you wait till right before you PCS, which is a crazy time. PCS means permanent change of station, where we're like moved every 3 years.
Yeah.
Like you're good. It's too late. It's too late. Your movers are here. You're planning the next station. You're looking for a house over there. And now your dog is not prepared for this move. Chewers and destroyers, again, like you have to kind of weigh it out. Like if they're going to chew through a wall and they're going to be a little anxious in their crate, what's better, right? Like if they're going to hurt themselves out of their crate, but maybe it's not their favorite place to be, but they're still calm in there, then that's obviously the better place to be. If they're chewers outside and they're like killing themselves to get out of the crate, then that's a completely different situation. Because a destructive dog is destructive outside and in the crate, right? Like if somebody sees that their dog is just a wreck outside, inside, where do they go? First, a dog trainer?
Well, yes, but preferably a dog trainer that has a specialization in separation anxiety and absolutely a positive reinforcement dog trainer. There's such a, how do I want to say this? People are like all into balance trainers right now, and it sounds wonderful. Oh, balance. Balance is good.
That's the biggest misnomer I have ever heard of in my life. There's like literally like that's like calling my 2.5-year-old toddler balanced. Like there is no such thing as a balanced toddler. There is no such thing as a balanced trainer. You're either
It's an abusive spouse that apologizes. That's what it is.
That's a really good analogy.
And I just can't. You can't, when you see it that way, you can't unsee it that way.
No, exactly. So for those who are watching that don't know what a balanced trainer is, can you explain it to us?
It is a dog trainer who is willing to use positive punishment. So they're willing to introduce a negative stimulus to get a desired result. And that is, for when you think about our dogs having an average like understanding of like a 2.5-year-old, right? What can we actually expect them to understand and grasp? And dogs very much live in the moment as well, right? Like they're not like us where we're like, okay, 2 years ago, I made a left on this street and got hit, so now I don't want to make a left on this street. Like they don't think like that. So what we're doing is, again, we're punishing behavior. That's really the long and the short of it. And without giving them, it's so much better. If you even think about you, think about how you learn best. Are you going to learn best by getting the answer wrong and somebody smacking your hand until you get the answer right? Or are you going to learn best by, if you get the answer wrong, somebody saying, hey, what do you think if we maybe do it this way instead?
Yes,
and helping you and walking you through making the choice they want you to make to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's what a positive reinforcement trainer does, is they walk you, your dog, that they walk you to walk your dog through. Because really, in reality, even positive reinforcement training with your dog, if that trainer is not training you as the person, doesn't matter.
And it's all about what the perspective, right? So it's like for the negative reinforcer, for those who aren't sure what that means, that's like a choke collar, a shock collar, like you know, throw them in the crate because that's punishment, right? Like that's those kinds of things. So the negative addition would be something that you add, like the shock, the choke, the pull, whatever that is. Hitting obviously is negative reinforcement, right? Which we don't want to do. And I'm not saying that balanced trainers hit. So that's not, please don't put those words in my mouth.
No. And not every balanced trainer will use in all of these tactics, but they're willing. They have one or more of these that they are willing to use.
Right. Exactly. For me, I think of positive reinforcement trainers as tell them what you want them to do. I think of balanced and, I guess, you know, aversive trainers as tell them what you don't want them to do. And as a parent, I can tell you that my husband and I have this conversation a lot. My husband is military. He was raised in the military. He is a military officer. The no and the stop and the young man comes really easy to him, like really easily. And it did for me too, because my mom's pretty militant. She has no military affiliation, but my mom was a really strict mom. And the no just goes so fast. But then you don't have anything else to like tell them what to do. So for my four-year-old, don't make a mess of your room. Pick up after yourself. Pick up your clothes that you whatever you don't decide to wear today, please put it back. Mm-hmm. That teaches her something. Don't make a mess of your room is silly, because a four-year-old is like, what is a mess?
Right.
This is not a mess. This is pretty.
Yes.
And she has her stuff all over the place. Yes. So that's the difference. That's the way I parallel it, or that's how I define it. Like, tell them what you want. Tell them what you don't want and see which is more effective. And as a parent and as a dog person, as a cat person, I can tell you, and for me, just like you asked, what would make it better for me? Tell me what you want from me, not what you don't want from me.
Yes.
And for the crate, and for back to crate training, it's the same thing. So the person who wrote this, Kelly, she says that she just tells her dog to go in the crate and he goes in the crate. Why? Because she tells him what she wants from him and she rewards him when he listens. She gives him a treat right after he gets in the crate. Mm-hmm. So for him, he has this not only a positive association where he goes in when he's not being rewarded, but he also knows that when that cue comes, there's a treat that follows as long as he follows the cue. So like really telling him what to do pays off for him in the end, and that's why he keeps doing it.
Right.
And that's really so basic, but like we want to be like, crate now. And the dog's like, what's in it for me? Like, why?
And that reinforcer needs to be stronger than whatever reinforcement the dog is getting from the behavior you don't want them to be doing. It doesn't matter what your dog is doing. Doesn't matter what your child is doing. It doesn't matter what you're doing. There is a reason for it. There is some reinforcement that we are all getting from whatever behavior we are exhibiting.
Yes.
So if you think of all of the behavior your dog is doing that you don't like, just because you don't like it doesn't mean that they're not getting some reinforcement from it. And they're very basic. They're very, very basic. It's usually some form of comfort or getting energy out, getting food, nourishment, because dogs are scavenger carnivores.
Right.
That's what they are genetically predisposed to do, is search for food.
And so is my toddler, and so is my Noah, and they, if there is food there, and I'm eating a cookie, and their dad's calling them upstairs to go to bed, who do you think they're going to be paying attention to? Me with the cookies.
The cookie.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's so basic, but like when people don't think of it that way, it's so, so basic. One thing I will say is that crate training for me has helped a ton when I had a reactive dog who wanted to be part of the event but wasn't comfortable. So she would be crated with the door open in a room nearby. And she was crated so that people can come in and out. She was not scared of that. She wanted to kind of know what was happening. But I could not let her free roam because she wasn't comfortable with kids. She wasn't comfortable with strangers. And she was safer there for everybody, for herself, for the guests, whenever she was there. And that was our way of managing, because she also had FOMO. So if I put her in a room upstairs, she would just bark and cry because she wasn't observing. So again, it's all about figuring out what makes your pet tick, what motivates these behaviors, and kind of figuring out a way to like meet them halfway. Cause like she was crated, but she was involved and it worked for her. It worked beautifully for her.
Yeah. And so Brooke has two comments here, and I want to address both of them.
Yes.
The first one that's been there for a while, she's talking about Todd, who she invited to watch as well, and his Great Dane, who has destroyed crates. I absolutely 100% would recommend Todd either find a trainer that has gone through Milena De Martini's program, or go through one of her programs online, I will say that I have not been through any of her programs. What I did, because this was so long ago, I read her book. I literally every night, like this was my Bible. I got her book and it was my Bible. And I have little like dog ears and post-it notes and highlights. And I did every single thing that she said to do with my dog that had separation anxiety. And it was
Yes.
magical. And that is actually what made me become a dog trainer because I said, if I can do this for my dog, knowing
Yes.
the biases we have with our own
Yeah.
dogs, right? Like the laziness and the, you know, things we don't see and we don't notice because they're
Yeah.
our dogs. I'm like, then I can help other
And
people.
I will say, Brooke, Brooke was at the Texas Pet Sitters Conference. Milena is a huge supporter. Every time I've asked her for any kind of giveaway, she gave away one of her courses, the pet parent course, which is great for pet sitters and for anybody, really. If you can't afford to do like the professional
Yeah.
course, this is, I think it was $129, more or less. And it is a course about separation anxiety to help you with your dog or help you learn the skills to address separation anxiety. So that's really a minimal investment when you think about it, especially as a
Yeah.
professional. It's a tax write-off. So it's called Mission Possible, and it's on her website, and it's an online, self-paced course, and it's amazing. And then she has the book. It's Milena DeMartini. She's in the what's the name of the book? Is it also Mission Possible?
No, hang on. I think it's right behind me. Let me.
I'm on her website all the time, so I'll pull that up too. So her book, she gave away a couple
My
of them too
earbuds back
for,
in.
oh yeah, perfect.
Treating separation anxiety in dogs.
Yep, so that's a great resource, Brooke, and
You
she's
can
actually
stay
gonna be
all
on
on
my
my.
show again. She's on my show again. So if you want to do a one like separation anxiety 101, I interviewed her right after the pandemic. She is so insightful. It's such a great interview because it's fun. We have a good time. We have a good chat. She says that about 50% of dogs have separation anxiety. This is not a conversation about separation anxiety. However, if your dog is one of those 50%, that crate training gets a little
Yeah.
complicated, which is what's funny is the title of this article that we're talking about is literally, should you crate your dog? It's complicated.
Yes.
So it gets a lot more complicated if your dog has separation anxiety. So definitely, again, address the separation anxiety first. Follow your dog trainer's lead on crate training because you don't want to make it worse. Like that's really a very it's like a fine line, right? It's like a slow dance.
I must have turned a filter on. I'm like looking at myself on Instagram, I'm like, well, what happened?
Oh yeah, there you do look a little more tan than before. I
I
was like, does
did.
she like
I'm
get a
like, I
tan
don't
all of a
have
sudden?
tan. Okay, the second question was about shelter dogs because yes, obviously they are going to have negative associations with confinement. And I will say, so I do have an online course for training, but I don't get in the weeds with crate training because of this love-hate relationship that I have to it. But Susan Garrett, who is a fabulous positive reinforcement dog trainer, she has her crate games course, which
Yes.
again, if you're a pet professional, it would be a tax write-off. I don't think it's expensive anyway. I don't know the price off the top of my head, but probably less than a couple $100. And it is all about retraining the association. And you really do have to go so slow. And that's the thing that I find people have the hardest part with. They can grasp the idea of the positive association, but how slow you have to go, first of all, varies from dog to dog. So it's not like a do exactly this every single time. You have to judge the dog and learn, do I need to back off some? Can I go ahead and move forward? I try to move forward and it doesn't work. Okay, so I need to take a step back.
Yes.
And but she's an amazing dog trainer and I think hers is called Crate Games. So I would highly recommend her
Yeah.
course for
And
that.
I will say that when it comes to separation anxiety, that's what we talked about with Milena, is that literally her recommendation for beginning to desensitize your dog to separation anxiety is literally leave them alone when you go to the mailbox. and see
No.
how and
Like,
literally see
if you read
how
this
long
book,
your dog can handle it, and then come right back in the second your dog whines or whatever. It's slow. It's
This
baby
is
steps.
like, no, in this book, when I was going through this book, it's literally like my dog would be in the kitchen and I would go around the corner for a split second and come right
Yes.
back. Like,
Yes.
that's how baby step we're talking
We're
about.
talking
Because
really, really
if
slow.
I could go around the corner and come right back without her paws moving, that was a huge win. If her paws moved at all, like she was walking towards me, she couldn't handle it,
Right, exactly.
right?
Exactly. And again, we're detectives here. We're observing. We're observing these behaviors, and the only way we can observe these behaviors is putting them in those situations, but doing so gently, because you don't want to. I mean, if I have plenty of fears, if you leave me in in a room with my fear, you're not going to help me at all. Like, you're definitely just think about it from your perspective. And I also want to address something that Brooke said about shelter dogs. I only have shelter dogs. Like, I've only ever
Same.
worked with shelter dogs, because that's just what I do. And half of my dogs have loved the crate, even though they were shelter dogs, because it became like kind of like a safe little apartment, condo, whatever you want to call it for them, cozy, comfy, and it didn't feel the same as your shelter kennel, or it wasn't, and it, you know, a lot of the shelter experience is kind of like that the layering of triggers, right? Trigger stacking. So in my home, they had a crate, but they didn't have the other dogs barking. They didn't have the strange smells. They didn't have all the other things that were triggering for them. So don't assume that just because they're a shelter pet, or just because they're a puppy, or just because they're a senior who was abandoned, don't make assumptions for your pets. Let your pets tell you. And it's something like when you go in with the mindset of, I hate dog training, or I hate dog crating. I don't believe in it. It sucks. I have to do it. Then your dog's gonna pick up on that. And they're not gonna be as eager to learn this skill. So really it's about checking yourself, your biases, like you said, your preconceived notions. Like, as a professional dog walker, professional dog trainer, person who's been doing helping pet parents acclimate their dogs to crates, helping potty train, helping recovery after surgeries. I can only sit here, and as a military spouse who sees people moving constantly, I can only like sing the praises of crates. I really can, because I've seen them used to make things manageable, possible, doable, you know, peaceful. Whereas, of course, like somebody like PETA is going to tell you, how dare you crate this animal? You shouldn't even have them to begin with, right? So we might be on both extremes. But again, I would never tell you to crate a dog for 8 hours with no break. I would never tell you, and it's so many people do that. So many people do that because
In
if you
fact, people have come at me before because, and I will, there are hills that we all die, will die
Yes.
on, and I will die on the hill that your dog should never be in a crate longer than 4 hours.
That's super
Can hate
fair. To
me,
me,
you can
that's
hate
fair.
me,
So
but no.
I completely think that's fair. I think 4 to 6 hours is the most. I personally have never crated overnight, just because unless I was potty training, and obviously like I wanted them to like whine a little so I could wake up. But usually I don't crate overnight. That's not something I do. Eventually they like, you know, they like sleep right next to my bed, whatever, no big deal. But from this article, and this is who's this person that they're quoting? Nofi. So this is a person who Mar Marnie Nofi, director of the ASPCA's Behavioral Sciences team. This is a quote. The time in the crate should be limited to 4 or 5 hours, with 30 or to 60 minutes of exercise beforehand. And if you're crating both during the day and at night, each crating period should follow 60 to 90 minutes of exercise focused on enrichment or training. If your dog is distressed in the crate, is not having their exercise needs met, or their overall well-being seems compromised, you should reassess if crating is right for your dog. So again, time, how much time you leave in there. For those who missed it, she does not recommend anything more than 4 to 5 hours in a crate. And before you crate them, you're talking about 30 to 60 minutes of exercise before they get in there, so that they get their needs met. They're pottied out. They went for a walk. They've sniffed. And by the way, letting them out for 30 minutes in the yard is not what we're referring to here. So, like, anybody
active.
who thought, oh yeah, my dog goes out for the yard. No, we're talking about exercise. We're talking about mental physical
Engagement.
stimulation.
Yes.
Exactly. A walk is fine. Playtime with you is fine. Anything that gets them going. Like, you know the difference between walking to the coffee shop and actually going to the gym. Like, this, that's basically the difference. Okay, guys. So that has to happen before you crate them. And then they have to be in there 4 to 5 hours. And if you have a dog that you need to crate for 8 hours, then you need a dog walker, period, end of story. And that is a hill I would die on for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Somebody needs to be responsible in coming to give your dog a break and giving them that another 30, at least 30 to 60 minutes of activity, enrichment, engagement before going back in the crate.
Yes.
And I think it's also worth mentioning what to do instead of the crate. So if you are in the process of crate training or you feel like your dog is not a good candidate for a crate, even with a dog who is really great in the crate, environmental management needs to be a top priority for you.
100%.
If you have, if you're potty training, and this is typically how I have trained people with potty training because I do have such a love-hate relationship with crates, is that if you are not sitting down actively engaging with your puppy, but they're also not outside, you're not outside with them, or you're not actively engaging in play or whatever you're doing with them, then they need to be leashed to you.
Yes.
They can't be wandering around, right? You can put up a baby gate to where they are in the kitchen with you, like depending on how your house is set up, put up a baby gate so they can't leave that area where you are, or put a leash on your dog and attach it to you, because it is ultimately your response. Like, you can be mad all you want that your dog has peed in the house, but it's your, I mean, I'm just a blunt person. It's your fault for not being on top of them,
100%.
Knowing what they're doing and paying attention to what they're doing while you're trying to train.
Absolutely. I'm going to do a little analogy and my husband might get mad at this, but I'm going to share it anyway. While I was traveling, I was doing my, you know, I'm in my conference era tour. I was, I called one morning and my husband was mad at the kids because he had slept in and they had gone into the candy downstairs. And I'm like, whose fault is that? Who was not supervising the 4 and 6 year old right after Valentine's Day when they knew that they had candy in the house? Whose fault is that? It's the same exact thing. And actually, one of the things that we did with Socks, who was one of the one that she's the one with all the issues. I have like a, I could write a book about all the things she taught me. But when my son Noah was a baby, we did baby led weaning, which is an amazing way to teach your kids to introduce solids. But like, he's like eating and making a mess. Like, it's messy. So of course Socks was like there just waiting. But Socks had very, very, very big mouth. He had very small fingers. And sometimes she got a little fresh and instead of just waiting for things to drop, she would go up and try to get his food. So what we did was, at the recommendation of a wonderful dog trainer in Miami, I don't know if she's still around, but her name is Rose, and she was positive reinforcement trainer. She was part of Pet Professional Guild. That's how I found her. She was like, put a leash on your dog and leash her to something in the house. And so she can kind of sit there and wait until he's done. And then once he's done, let her eat all the food off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, the second I was like, Socks, it's time to get your leash on. And the leash just lived there. It was like a little, like a little, one of these movable islands that had wheels. So I wrapped the leash there. It lived there. I would just tuck it under when we weren't using it. She would go up to it. She would wait. She would just watch. She would watch. She would salivate. She was ready. And then I would take Noah to clean him up and she would just clean up the whole floor. She was super happy. And like, so it was management without a crate.
Yeah.
She was crated enough while we were gone, so I didn't want to do like an additional time of crating in the house when we were home. So yeah, like the idea of having leashes in the house, people are like, what, a leash in the house? So useful for so many things.
For having guests over, for like, if you don't want your dog jumping on your guests, like, then you need to have somebody, like, you can be greeting your guests at the door while your husband has your dog on the leash at the other end of the house. Like, please use your leashes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, get creative with it. But again, avoid like leaving them unsupervised with a leash. Another couple things that we want to talk about, because we're running out of time, there's so much to talk about with crates. And
oh my gosh, I know.
One of the biggest things is, again, no zip locks, no zip ties or locks, like that is, or no like heavy duty travel crates because your dog's getting out of them. Don't do mm-hmm. that. Don't put in, again, if they're chewers, don't put any plush bedding and stuff that they can get into, because they could literally eat. Especially if it's like they're a chewer, they have separation anxiety, now they're stuck in there, and now they're literally self-soothing by swallowing a bunch of stuffing, you're going to end up with a $5,000 bill at the vet because your dog ate. And you think, my dog, what dog is dumb enough to eat stuffing from a bed? A lot of them. And it's not dumb. It's self-soothing. Yeah. It's like, I don't have anything else to do. I mean, we've seen stories of like a hiker get caught in under a rock and literally saw his own arm off, right? Mm-hmm. Dogs don't know when you're coming back. So for mm-hmm. them, that is that moment. Yeah. That is the either I gnaw my arm off or I die. That's what they're facing. So just to put it in perspective, collars, your collars, if they're trying to get out, they can get stuck mm-hmm. and they can strangle mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. So either your collar needs to be super tight, like one finger, all you need, or just no collar. Take the collar out, put it next to your crate. The dog goes in collarless. The second he comes out, you put the collar back on. I'm a big believer in collars because I've seen way too many dogs bolt out the front door. And like, if they're not wearing a collar, you know, people are less likely to approach. Cause like, am I going to really try to get this dog? I don't know if it's chipped. I don't know. But if I see a collar, I might be more motivated to like, you know, come, let me see, there's a phone number. Let me find their owner. Right. Same with cats. I'm a big collar person, but again, it has to be sized appropriately. I see so many collars just like hanging. Mm. That is a strangulation hazard, not only in the crate, but in general. And then if they've had prior injuries in the crate, proceed with caution, even if your dog trainer gives you the clear to start training again. If they've broken a nail, broken a tooth, tried to escape, hurt themselves, that is an indication that this is a very, very sensitive topic for them. So be very careful. And for as far as sizes are concerned, because Brooke is asking, I will quote the expert again. It's Nofi, Marnie Nofi, the director of the ASPCA's Behavioral Sciences team. Her first piece of guidance is selecting an appropriately sized crate and placing it in a safe location in the home. So safe location to me says not super noisy. Don't do it next to the dryer and throw shoes in there. So they could be, your dog's going to be like, what is that? They don't understand what's going on in your house. Not next to like a busy intersection where they're going to get frustrated. You know, like if they can see out the mm-hmm. door and they're crated there, they're just going to be frustrated watching people come by. Yeah. When I said that my sister's dog was by a window, she's like on the 8th floor. So he's not seeing people downstairs. He's just getting the benefits of the sunshine. So remember, like anything that frustrates them or sets them off, that's not a good location for it. Obviously it needs to be ventilated. No garages in the super heat, because that is super dangerous and it happens way too often where people crate dogs in unventilated mm-hmm. areas or in garages, and it's fatal. And then about the size, probably larger than you think is what this person says. Dogs should be able to stand up, turn around, lie down, and stretch out their limbs completely in a crate. Extended periods in a crate that is too small can be physically uncomfortable, Nofi says, and in extreme cases, it can lead to musculoskeletal problems, mm-hmm. especially in puppies, because they're still developing those bones and their joints, and their bones aren't fused, so you don't want mm-hmm. them to fuse inappropriately. Mm-hmm. So definitely size always matters, guys. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. I couldn't help myself.
It does, though. So,
I'm just kidding.
It does.
Don't come at me. I'm just kidding. But I mean, I couldn't help myself. It was too easy. So definitely crate size, time and crate, all of that needs to be considered. I remind you again of my favorite quote when it comes to dog training. A fool with a tool is still a fool. So know why you're doing things, know when you're doing things, know the maximum threshold that your dog can handle for things. Just because, you know, Jessica and I both have separation anxiety dogs doesn't mean that both of our dogs are going to be the same. Mm-hmm. They're going to have the same tolerance for things. Yeah. Just because your neighbor said, just because your mom said, just because your old dog when you were growing up did X doesn't mean that it's going to work for this dog that is right in front of you. So work with the dog that's right in front of you. Always.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to end. Work with the dog in front of you.
Always, always work with the dog, the husband, the child, the cashier. Just work with the person in front of you, always, for the best possible, you know, resolution or the best possible scenario. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys for joining us. I'm so happy that we had I want to say Adriana. Hi, Adriana. She's another one of my favorite pet sitters. She's from Shoreline Happy Paws in Connecticut, in the Connecticut shoreline. So she says, love this topic. And of course, pet sitters and dog walkers are going to love this topic because it affects them every single day,
Absolutely.
Day in and day out. And, you know, the benefits of dog crates are huge, but they can also be so misused. And then you're, you know, as a professional pet sitter or dog walker, you have to explain to the client, like, you know, you're only having me here 15 minutes in a 10-hour period. It's not enough. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll say we because I still consider myself part of the industry, but like we get a bad rap for wanting to like upgrade or upsell, and it's not. It's your pet needs it. Your pet needs more time. Your pet needs more of an exercise. Your pet needs more attention, whatever it is. So work with your pet care team to solve whatever issues you have when it comes to crate training, and trust your pet care professionals. If you don't trust them to have your pet's best interest in mind, maybe you shouldn't be working with them. But if your dog trainer, dog walker, dog pet sitter says like they need more exercise before being crated, by all means take mm-hmm. that advice, because they do see it day in and day out. And we see like a dog that does really well in a crate, and we'll see the dogs that don't, and like there's a marked difference. So
Absolutely.
Definitely trust our expertise.
Yes.
Yay! Bye. That was it.
Yes. Loved this topic. And I don't know what we'll figure out what we're going to talk about next week. If you guys have any suggestions, recommendations, something you would like for us to talk about, you can message either one of us and we will take it into consideration.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll see you guys back here next Monday.
Yeah, if what we do is usually for these topics, just look for something that came out like recently, like in the news. It is the weekly pet roundup. And so we like to talk about news, pet news, but any topic is always welcome, at least as a suggestion. So if you find any articles too, like anything, like this was Washington Post, the one before last week was Forbes. If you find any articles, whether you agree with them or not, send them our way. We'd love to see them.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Y'all have a great week.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.